live to Right Side Radio with Phil Williams. It's hard to go wrong when you're on the right side. Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right.
News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right, like my dude just said. And by the way, listen, if you find yourself heading outside of the typically overly broad range of our AM-FM capability here at WVNN, just know that you can listen to us no matter where you are. That's why we have listeners in multiple states. We have listeners, you know, down in the coast right now. I've got somebody who's down in Key West right now that I know is hearing parts of the show. All you got to do is go to rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. Click on Listen Live. And, you know, wherever you is, there we is what I like to say. So right now, we're going to move back to where I was before the beginning of the news cycle there. So, Copper, go ahead. Clip one. Let's start it from the very beginning, Copper. I want to go back on that. I don't want to lose its total context. So I started playing this clip, and then it dawned on me, nah, we're not going to make it before the hour's up. So we're going to start it over again, but here's the deal. This is why I say it is so important that you elect people at the state level. I mean, it's so easy to watch the news and get focused on Congress, so the U.S. Senate, the president, you know, who's going to battle Nancy Pelosi in D.C. What you got to remember is that there are times and places within public policy that what happens in Montgomery for us means more than what happens in D.C. That's true in every state. And then what happens is this. When one state sets itself apart as being extremely difficult to work with, and the other states have to deal with it because it affects their supply chain or anything else for that matter, well, it becomes an issue of national importance. California is that state. They are the role model for overregulation. They are the role model for government overreach at the state level. They are the role model for how not to do it, and they are jacking up our supply chain like you would not believe. Copper, go ahead and play clip one.
With me now, Congressman Jay Obernolte of California. Congressman, okay, we keep hearing from truckers that this is what's behind the supply chain crisis that's afflicting the entire country, that California hyper-regulated and over-regulated the country into a trucking labor shortage of 80,000 truckers and a supply chain crisis. Do you see anyone taking this problem on? I mean, a third of our imports arrive in lunacy central of dysfunction and bad ideas, California.
Absolutely. You are so right about that, Liz. So recently, California enacted a new law that made it next to impossible for truckers to be independent contractors. And you can't be surprised when putting more regulation on an already overregulated industry causes that industry to have a shortage in a state. And this is just the latest in a long line of bad ideas from California. California already leads the nation in income tax rate. We have the highest sales tax. We have the highest gas tax. And yet, we also lead the nation in poverty. We have the highest poverty rate in the entire country. We lead the nation in homelessness. We have the worst traffic and the second worst roads. So to think that we should export those ideas to the rest of the country is lunacy.
You know, the far left has pushed California over the...
That's an amazing clip. And by the way, keep in mind, that is a congressman from California saying that about his home state. Now, he's a Republican, and obviously the powers that be, typically that control the state measures he's talking about, are all Democrat. But nonetheless, that's an amazing thing when you stop and think about what you just heard. The state has the highest amount of regulatory action. It has the highest sales taxes. It has the highest property taxes. It has the highest payroll taxes. And yet it also has the highest level of homelessness and unemployment and some of the worst roads in the nation. What are they using those tax dollars for? Well, I'll tell you, one of the things they're doing is what he said in the beginning of the clip. They have overregulated the trucking industry in that one state, and yet right now we can't get trucks to unload the ports. It is completely jacked up. And that's an amazing situation when you consider what a state did. So folks, when you're looking at who is your state senator, who is your state representative, who is going to be elected to be governor or lieutenant governor, understand that these people set policies that don't just affect Montgomery, they affect you. And then by virtue of that, they can affect things outside of your border. Classic example, I'm looking at a story right here from the Daily Wire. So I'm reading the story, and it really struck me. This is going to affect Christmas. A toy company CEO is explaining how high inflation and worker shortages are slamming his business. So this is from the Daily Wire, dated yesterday, as a matter of fact. Chief executive of a leading American toy manufacturer foresees inflation lasting well into 2022. His company is called American Plastic Toys. They have plants in Michigan and Mississippi, so they're on both ends of the nation, in, you know, north and south. And he says they're incredibly deeply affected by labor shortages. He says himself, here's his quote, "I could not in good conscience accept additional orders when I had to really work and do everything I could to satisfy the orders we'd already booked 6 months ago in some cases." He said, "We have some loads that have been on the truck for almost a week waiting for logistic companies and transportation companies to turn those loads." Folks, I don't know if y'all are familiar with this. This is a very cool thing called just-in-time logistics. For instance, in Northeast Alabama, we have a plant that makes sunroofs for Mercedes plant down in Tuscaloosa. They have this very cool thing called just-in-time logistics, where basically the plant in Tuscaloosa that makes the Mercedes vehicle, it puts in its order based upon what it knows is coming off the assembly line and based upon when it knows it will come off the assembly line. And the plant in the Gadsden area that makes the sunroofs will literally have those things made, serial numbered, stacked in the truck in the order in which they're needed, and due to arrive at the plant within minutes sometimes of when they're actually needed. And they'll unload them, and they'll be coming off the truck, bam, on the car, bam, on the car, bam, on the car, just-in-time logistics. That's the way a log system can work. Now, that's a short term. That's a plant to plant. That's a part that's needed. But when you begin to damage the supply chain in other places, you begin to damage even the ability to do short-term plant-to-plant just-in-time logistics on things like that. And then you got this guy right here who has two major plants with lots of employees in Michigan and Mississippi, and he cannot even get the trucks off his own yard. Former Walmart CEO Bill Simon, in the same article, called the supply chain crisis a mess from start to finish and told Fox Business he doesn't think it's going to end until after we alleviate the labor shortage that's out there and get people driving trucks and unloading the docks and stocking the shelves. Yep, I would agree. Looking at another story here from the Wall Street Journal. Inflation is approaching a tipping point at the grocery store, it says. Yeah, it talks about consumer confidence, and it says that once you get inflation going up past 5%, consumer buying habits really start to change at that point. People will settle, they'll deal with it to some degree. You know, you'll basically work with what you got. But when you start getting past 5%, people start changing their buying habits. They switch to generics. They get off the name brands. They move away from the pricier stuff. They go from, you know, buying the good pasta to getting ramen noodles. You know what I'm saying? And all said and done, things begin to change. And that changes the entire market. It says right now in this article from the Wall Street Journal dated 2 days ago, inflation is now so hot that main staple companies feel they have no option anymore but to pass it on to the consumer. Nestle, Danone, Procter & Gamble all said this week that consumers can expect to have higher bills on their products at the grocery store. And the question is only how far can they push it before the shoppers defect to cheaper brands or buy fewer items. That's where we are right now under Bidenomics. And this, by the way, this U.S. inflation rate, this inflation rate is at a 13-year high. 13-year high. And that's amazing. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is Bidenomics. Well, just in time to go ahead and wrap up that part of the triple dipper, I see I got a call on line four. I'm going to take Brian from Huntsville. Copper, if you can grab that for me. It's big doings here that we're at this point in our economy. But hey, line four, Brian from Huntsville, Phil Williams here on Right Side Radio. What's on your mind?
I appreciate you talking about just-in-time logistics.
Yeah.
And I think I did a paper on that in college in about 92.
Yeah, how about that? Hey, Brian, I think we're losing you. Can you hear me okay? Brian, you got a good signal. Can we hear you?
Okay, I can hear you.
Okay, I think we got you now. If you're on a speakerphone, make sure you're off the speakerphone, okay?
Oh, it's off. So, but as far as the just-in-time logistics goes, one of the reasons is the Japanese and the land space they have available to them, the reason they developed this a few decades back was to get rid of a lot of warehouses. And these people you were talking about, even if they made the products, they wouldn't have any place to put it because warehouses have been taken.
It's amazing, too, to watch it work. And when you get just-in-time logistics working really well, Brian, and I know you can speak to this, it's an amazing system. I mean, it's extremely impressive, and it certainly is technology-based, too, but it's extremely impressive. But right now, even that's being affected, I think. Well, do we lose him? Hey, Brian, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate that very much. I think he had a bad connection. It was struggling to hear, but he's right. And that's it's a great point. Is just-in-time logistics actually does away with the need for warehousing. You don't have stock building up. You don't have parts in bins. You literally are able to say, we need this, and tier two and tier three manufacturers get it ready, and it ships to the actual, you know, final destination for assembly, and they put it together as it comes off the truck. It's very cool. But folks, that doesn't work if you don't have the truckers and you don't have the fuel prices to sustain it and you don't have the availability of the parts and you don't have the materials to make the parts. And that's where we are right now in the world of Bidenomics. All right, well, that's number one of the triple dipper. Bidenomics is jacking up our supply chain, and inflation is at 13-year high. I'm not trying to depress you. It's a Friday. The weekend's coming. But nonetheless, you be aware, this is what happens when you elect somebody who's never led a thing in his life and sat in his basement for the entire campaign. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break right now. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. We got plenty more where that came from. Going to come back and spend a little time talking about the workforce. Where are the workers? How do we get them back? Phil Williams. We'll be right back. Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams here, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. By the way, I love our bump music. I mean, Copper, I did hear one the other day, though. I got another Van Halen song I'm going to have to send to you that I think we're going to have to incorporate into our bumps. So just be prepared. It's coming your way.
All right.
We're going to make some more bump out of Van Halen because they bump well. So listen, let me switch gears. Triple dipper for the day. Bidenomics was number one. I spent a great deal of time there weaving together for you all the different aspects of Bidenomics. If you're talking to a liberal friend, if you're at work and someone says, well, I just think the best thing that could happen for the economy is not to have Donald Trump in office anymore, you can go ahead and give them what I gave you over the last hour. Have them listen to one of our podcasts if you want to. For all effects here, you could just go ahead and say it's failing in every capacity. Inflation's at a 13-year high. We're over 5% inflation. The supply chain is jacked up. California's not helping because they've overregulated the trucking industry. 80,000 trucking jobs are unfilled right now. We got plants like the guys that have American Toys that I told you about, and they can't get trucks out of their own yard. The supply chain is completely disrupted, and stores are seeing empty shelves, and it's interesting. Interesting to say the least, that anybody would think. It's not interesting, it's ridiculous that anybody would think that the Biden administration is doing a great job because they're failing miserably on this economy, failing us. Well, the other piece that we're dealing with right now is, where are the workers? I mean, I don't know which of these great articles that I've got in my hands to go with. I've got one that talks about Alabama in particular, but then I've got this great, let's see, which one I want to go with first. I'm going to go with the Heritage Foundation. Heritage Foundation wrote an amazing piece that I just pulled down off the net. It actually came out last week, but I'm sitting here, man, this thing is so highlighted, I might as well read the thing to you. But a guy named Doug Badger, a senior fellow on domestic policy studies at the Heritage Foundation, wrote one called Biden's Job-Killing Schemes. Isn't that a name? And he talks about the fact that in the middle of vaccine mandates and everything else we've got going on, that the Biden administration should be working to eliminate labor shortages, but instead they appear to be trying to worsen them. Despite, he says, $9 trillion in fiscal and monetary stimulus from the federal government, America still has an employment problem. Okay, here's some facts for you. Let these sink in for a minute. The Labor Department estimates that 10.4 million jobs remain unfilled in August, which was the last month we had full figures. 10.4 million jobs remaining unfilled. That includes 1.5 million in healthcare, and the same month, a record high 4.3 million people quit their jobs. A record high 4.3 million people quit their jobs in August. Oh, wait, let me think. Was August the month when President Biden announced his vaccine mandate? Yes, it was. The government also reported, according to the Heritage Foundation, that 3.1 million fewer people were seeking work than they were, in February of 2020, before the COVID-19 pandemic began. So in other words, we're still right now, we're not back to pre-pandemic levels. 3.1 million fewer people. We didn't lose that many people. It wasn't like 3.1 million people died. Is there some of the workforce that suffered in COVID? We had natural attrition on top of that, certainly. But right now, 3.1 million fewer people are seeking work than they were before COVID pandemic started. Hospital employment just this year declined by 165,000. Yep. Nursing homes. This is a big one. Nursing homes have shed 410,000 employees across the industry. That's 12% of the industry's workforce in the nursing home associations. 12% of the industry is gone. Now, the guy from Heritage that I'm reading the article from, he kind of gets kind of coy. He says, the good news is President Biden has a plan. The bad news is his plan could result in the loss of millions of additional workers. Dang. I mean, how do you look at this? I'm just reading you numbers. They're right here on the paper. I've highlighted them. This is not something you make up. It's like saying 2 plus 2 does equal 4. You can't argue with that. So the president announced in August, remember this, the president announced in August that he planned to impose a vaccine mandate on nursing home staffs. And nursing homes lost 38,000 staffers in the next 30 days. 38,000 nursing home staff quit their jobs immediately after the vaccine mandates were announced. What does that tell you? I got more of that. We're going to deep dive in some of this stuff. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We're in number 2 of the Triple Dipper talking about workforce woes. Where are the workers? Well, I'll tell you where they are. Most of them are sitting at home trying to ride it out. See what happens in 2022 elections. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. We'll be right back. News Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Solid and conservative and just plain right. We are dealing with our Triple Dipper for the day. We've already moved through the first one. Triple Dipper number 1 was Bidenomics. We spent time talking about inflation and supply chain management. And then we moved right into the one that's really kind of tied to it if you get down to it. But it's almost a separate category in itself. Workforce. Where are all the workers? And I was giving you some amazing stats. The Heritage Foundation has done just an incredible job. This piece right now by senior fellow Doug Badger, dated last week, October 14th. But the bottom line is this Biden's job-killing schemes article from Heritage that I'm reading is filled with stats that I had not seen all these stats. And there's some, there's some stats in here. Like, for instance, get this. This is fascinating to me. Maybe I should be worried by the fact that I'm fascinated with this. But nonetheless, think about this. In August of this year alone, 25,000 state and local education workers quit their jobs. 25,000 nationwide state and local education workers quit their jobs. And the latest jobs employment report shows the education sector has lost 19,000 jobs in September that we know of so far. That was August, then September. Between the two, we're looking at 44,000 jobs gone. So, and then on top of that, you have 173,000 fewer school employees in September of this year than we did in February of last year before the pandemic. 173,000 fewer. Charlene and I were out at Otter Creek Farm the other night at a wedding event, and we saw a friend of ours. And she's an educator, And she literally just decided now's the time, and she dropped her papers and retired. And I mean, do you blame her? It was very real at that moment, because I'm hearing someone talk about the very thing that I'm reading to you about right now. And so labor supply is tight. Government policies, you think they'll be encouraging people to go back to work, not inducing them to leave their jobs? Well, so let's talk about this OSHA deal. So I know all of y'all are hearing about the vaccine mandates. Some of y'all are dealing with it personally. I get a lot of emails. By the way, if I have not answered your email yet, please forgive me. I'm getting swamped with those, and I am trying to keep up. But nonetheless, I'm getting emails from people that are heartbreaking. Phil, I'm losing my job. My spouse is losing their job. We decided we're not going to get the vaccine, or our employer is just not going to do the testing, or whatever the case may be. And it's tough. Well, Biden has said that what he's going to do is he's passing this on to OSHA. OSHA is going to have to inspect any employer with 100 employees or more. Right now, there's 164,000 firms, roughly, nationwide that have more than 100 employees. All right. Currently, OSHA, according to this report, only has about 800 inspectors. It says here, a senior policy advisor named Debbie Berkowitz told NBC News recently it would take 160 years for OSHA to get into every workplace just once. It's understaffed and under-resourced. So what does that mean? Either A, the policy is not going to be enforceable, or B, they're going to spend a lot of money to plus up OSHA so they can come out and see your business. And that's a problem. The article from Heritage goes on to talk about an interesting thing about a Mississippi businessman. He runs a Mississippi company that makes heavy industrial equipment like forklifts and generators. He told NBC, quoted here in this Heritage article, only 30% of his 1,300 employees are vaccinated. 30%. He said despite his company's efforts to entice them with free vacation days and things like that, 70% of his employees have chosen not to get vaccinated out of 1,300. And he says, I can't fire that many workers. That defies logic, he says. It's crazy. But he also says he does not know how in the world he could possibly devise, implement, and finance a weekly testing program for hundreds of employees that's going to pass federal muster. How's he going to do it? There's no way to do it, folks. This is one of those things where you're in an awful catch-22. Do you basically destroy your business by getting rid of all the people you need, thereby destroying the economy in that town? I mean, I would imagine this town would probably like to keep its 1,300 employees. But if he fires 70% of them, there's no way that plant stays open. No way at all. And so here we are. And then on top of that, I know, this is almost like depressing, but on top of that, think about this. So now we have this $3.5 trillion spending bill that Biden is desperate to get pushed, and it's being debated, and it's being potentially, you know, lowered like maybe to $2 trillion. Wow. But it also, that particular bill contains a number of what are considered to be job-killing policies. If it passes, University of Chicago economist Casey Mulligan says, the measure's combination of work disincentives, labor market competition limits, employer mandates, and higher consumer prices for telecom, energy, and other products is going to reduce full-time employment by an estimated 7 million jobs. What the heck? I mean, I look at this and think, how do they sit down and make these plans? I mean, do y'all ever think of that? I mean, like a couple of weeks ago, I did a Adventures in Woke World. We occasionally do this segment where I script out this kind of crazy conversation. What happens if you're with a liberal, and how's the conversation going to go on these different topics? And I did one on what would it be like to be behind the scenes at Jen Psaki's communications department for the White House, trying to figure out how to say it in a positive way when ain't nothing positive going on. And it was fun. It was a fun one. It's not fun in real life. And I look at it and think, how do they take stuff like these policies that are crushing the economy and decide that they're good and put them together and say, well, we inherited a horrible economy from the Trump administration and we're going to build back better. You're crushing the economy, which, by the way, was thriving during the last minute. Anybody who says that we weren't better off last year financially or economically is just kidding themselves. So story by the Wall Street Journal, sitting here looking at it. Some of the same type facts. This came out just a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, actually. 5 million fewer Americans are employed than before the pandemic lockdowns. Yep. It goes on to talk about the National Federation of Independent Businesses, which is basically small business, NFIB, says 67% of small businesses have reported hiring or trying to hire in September. 42% of them have tried to raise their compensation to entice new employees, and a record 51% still have openings they can't get filled. Wow. Wow. And that's where we are right now. Meanwhile, we're in inflation that is running an average of 4.6 to 7.4% above the usual annualized rate. Meanwhile, people are sitting at home with the enhanced employment unemployment benefits just having ended last month, but they're still getting $300 monthly allowances per child, food stamps, rental assistance, and in some places they're still feeling the effects of the rent moratorium. I'm telling you, folks, it's like it's a calculated plan to crush our economy because none of this stuff makes any sense. Millions of jobs. I'm looking at a story here from CNBC. Did I go to CNBC? Yes, I did. So CNBC has this storyline. It says, millions of jobs, but a shortage of workers. Economists explain why that's worrying. Okay, I almost have to laugh because that's the headline. There's millions of jobs, but a shortage of workers. Economists explain why that's worrying. Well, you don't even have to say that last piece. If there's millions of jobs and a shortage of workers, is that enough? That says it. Why is it worrying? And it has the bullet points here that there's many aging workers and retiring folks that are voluntarily quitting right when we need more workers. Shifts are taking place in society that are becoming more pronounced on the labor market. I don't know about buy that one. Supply chain disruptions and global labor shortage is now a big problem for businesses around the world. Yes. COVID-19, yes. Supply chain disruptions, yes. And it talks about the latest labor data from the United States is just basically showing everything I've been saying, that there's somewhere in the neighborhood of 10 million job openings just in August, but the number of people leaving their jobs rose to 4.3 million, which creates quite the offset. And folks, it's out there. It's going on. Well, listen, that's where we are right now. You got Bidenomics with policies that are tearing up the supply chain, coalescing with liberal states like California that are overregulating the trucking industry and others. They can't get the ships unloaded. And then you've got, on top of that, you've got paying people to stay at home and not go back to work. And also, by the way, putting vaccine mandates in place that many people don't want, and they're forcing people to do something. And so some of them are walking. They're literally saying, no, you've given me so much free money, I'll go sit at home for a while and see if we can ride this out. Or for that matter, I'll go work somewhere else. Or how about like right here in the state of Alabama? In Birmingham alone, just in Birmingham, you've got St. Vincent's Hospital that is mandating vaccines or they will fire staff, whether it's medical or support staff or admin staff or whatever. They're firing staff, and right down the road, UAB is not. What do you think is going to happen there? At some point soon, St. Vincent's is going to go, oh, shoot, all we did was staff UAB. They didn't change the industry. They made a decision, and people began to walk with their feet, and all they did was walk 5 miles away and go to UAB and get hired. Because UAB made the decision. They recognized state law said we can't have a vaccine passport. That does seem to apply to us too, because we're UAB, University of Alabama, Birmingham's hospital. They get it. They revoked their mandate. They rescinded it altogether. People are still working without fear. What's going to wind up happening in situations like this? People are going to walk from one to the other. And the St. Vincent's Hospital is going to be the one that's suffering, trying to figure out how to make operations go, and they're going to be canceling elective surgeries and who knows what. But that's the world in which we live, exacerbated right now by an administration headed up by a man who has never led anything in his entire life, not once. He's never been in the military. He's never been the head of an organization. He's never run a small business. He's never started up an organization. All he's ever done his entire adult life is serve as a single elected official who had the joy of being able to go to the microphone and espouse all the rhetoric he wanted and then walk away without any responsibility. That is now who's in charge without a clue how to run an executive side of government. All right, folks, we're taking a break right now. We're going to come back. I'm going to start shifting gears on you, see if we can lighten this up a little bit. My word, that was heavy. Phil, is the world falling apart? Parts of it are. I'm still laughing, though, because I got a whole section I'm about to go into that I'm just calling, did they really just say that? There's some funny stuff coming up. All right, folks, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid conservative, just playing right. You hang on. We're coming back and try a little laughter before we go to the house for the night. Talk 770 AM, 92.5 FM, WVNN, Phil Williams, Right Side Radio. Right Side Radio is the news talk giant of North Alabama, and this is the biggest show across North Alabama afternoons right here, Right Side Radio. Solid, conservative, and just plain right. And you can always listen to us, by the way, no matter where you are, by going to rightsideradio.org. That's rightsideradio.org. Just click on that Listen Live button, and no matter where you is, there we is. Hey, so folks, listen, by the way, I got to tell you, my friends at ZLA Solutions are knocking it out of the park. And that segment we just did a minute ago about the workforce, that's a great segue to talk about ZLA just for a brief minute, because I was with them the other day. I know these folks personally. They've got an amazing resume right now for putting people back to work. So if you are indeed one of those employer groups that's struggling to fill out the workforce ranks in your particular plant, your operation, your business office, whatever the case may be, ZLA Solutions can do all of the recruiting, the background checks, the drug testing, whatever you need. Blue collar, white collar, does not matter. ZLA Solutions. Go to ZLAUSA.com. That's ZLAUSA.com for ZLA Solutions. So listen, I'm going to move to Triple Dipper number three, and I'm just going to call this segment, Did They Really Say That? I mean, that's the title of this whole section. You know, I usually do these things where I weave together a storyline on one topic, but this one, as I'm up this morning, I mean, I got up about 4:45 this morning, and I started, you know, surfing the news, going through different things, seeing what I could find, you know, and I, you know, had my cup of coffee, spent some time with the Lord. But the first, you know, one of the first things I did too this morning was spend about an hour just resourcing the show, and I kept finding these things and going, did they really just say that? Well, one of them I just found a little while ago. I hadn't even seen it until I was already on the air, and I sent it to Copper. Copper, the one that I just sent to you last called Clip 6, go ahead and get that ready, and just let me know when you got it. But Clip 6 is Jen Psaki. You ready? Man, you're fast, Copper. So here's the deal. Jen Psaki, I mentioned this briefly, but I'm going to play you the clip because when I listened to it, it was even better. So Jen Psaki is asked by the near infamous Peter Doocy from Fox News in a news clip during a press conference today, why did President Biden say last night in his town hall that he had been to the border? Play clip six.
We've seen from companies, large companies, private sector companies that have implemented these requirements across the
border.
That's not it. Okay, following up on...
There. All right. Is that it? Was it going straight to the question now? Go ahead and try it again, Copper, see if that was it. I'm sorry.
Seen from companies, large companies, private sector companies that have implemented these requirements across the board.
Okay, following up on something else the president said last night, why did President Biden say he has been to the border?
Well, Peter, as you may have seen, there's been reporting that he did drive through the border when he was on the campaign trail in 2008, and he is certainly familiar with the fact, and it stuck with him, with the fact that in El Paso, the border goes right through the center of town. But what the most important thing everyone should know and understand is that the president has worked on these issues throughout his entire career and is well-versed in every aspect of our immigration system, including the border. That includes when he was vice president, and he went to Mexico and Central America 10 times to address border issues and talk about what we can do to reduce the number of migrants who are coming to the border. He worked in a bipartisan manner with senators like Ted Kennedy, Harry Reid, John McCain, and others to push for comprehensive immigration reform. He does not need a visit to the border to know what a mess was left by the...
Stop the clip. Stop. I'm dying here. I mean, did she really just say that? First of all, did you hear the answer to the question? She's asked why did the president say last night that he's been to the southern border? And she said, Peter, I hope you understand the president went to the border when he was campaigning in 2008. That was 13 years ago. And then she goes on to say, you know, things like he knows where the border he knows where the border is. It runs right through the middle of El Paso. I know where the border is. That doesn't mean squat. And then she goes on to say he partnered with people like Ted Kennedy and Harry Reid. What? Well, listen, Charlene just sent me this thing a little while ago. Breaking news, which is also, by the way, I've got it up on my screen, too. Where am I right now? I went to foxnews.com on this one. Sure enough, and it's breaking news even as we speak. Customs and Border Patrol releases the latest numbers for the southern border migrant encounters, 192,000 in September alone. That brings a total fiscal year from 2021 up to 1.734 million. That's the most ever on record since 1986. Folks, but don't worry. President Biden went to the border when he was campaigning in 2008. That's important for you to know. I mean, did she really just say that? Yes, she did. And that's the kind of thing that happens when you sit in the back room and you're trying the best you can to figure out how to spin a horrible story. What are we going to say? You know Ducey's going to ask, how do we deal with the fact that the southern border is completely out of control? Have you seen the numbers? Oh, God, they're going to report those today. I think he went there in 2008. Oh, good, 13 years ago? Let's run with it. God almighty. All right, folks, we got more of those. Phil Williams, Right Side Radio, solid, conservative, and just plain right. We're going to educate, enlighten, empower, and entertain as we go through conservative policy. We'll be right back after the news.